Good afternoon. It's Mountain Edition. I'm Marcy Grivenin.
And I'm Elise Thatcher. Protesters greet the Forest Service as the agency reviews a drilling proposal.
And conceivably we'd have water damage, and conceivably the air quality could go to hell for a fair amount of time.
Glenwood Springs extends foot patrols after concerns about more transients spending long hours in town.
There are nuisance crimes that oftentimes come with these activities, whether it be urinating in public, open container of alcohol. So we're going to try and be very proactive and very alert to those things.
Pitkin County residents will vote on a broadband question this fall.
Wrangling bands for the JAS Aspen Snowmass Labor Day weekend is getting more difficult.
The town of Carbondale and a laboratory asked the state to crack down on marijuana enforcement.
The Aspen Community School kicks off the year in new digs.
And Colorado Mountain College is looking into reviewing how to attract students with diverse backgrounds.
That's coming up on Mountain Edition.
Pitkin County voters will weigh in this fall on whether to develop public broadband internet. Allison Bechtesh has the story.
The Pitkin County Board of Commissioners sent the question of a public broadband utility service to the November ballot. Commissioner Rachel Richards said the measure would provide a list of benefits to the community.
We're asking for the voters' assistance in being able to move broadband services forward in Pitkin County for economic reasons, for public safety reasons, for all those reasons.
A 2005 Colorado law outlaws government from competing in cable, telephone, and high-speed internet markets unless voters approve a measure such as the one on the fall ballot. The proposal would not increase taxes. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
The field of candidates has narrowed for a post with the 9th Judicial District. The vacant judgeship serves the Roaring Fork Valley.
A nominating commission selected two candidates for the job that opened after Judge Gail Nichols announced she would retire this fall. The nominees are Jefferson Cheney of Newcastle and Chris Selden of Basalt. Cheney works at a private law firm in Glenwood Springs. Selden is the assistant Pitkin County attorney. The decision is now in Governor John Hickenlooper's hands. He has 15 days to appoint one of the nominees to serve as district court judge for the 9th Judicial District. The position pays nearly $160,000 a year and oversees civil and criminal cases in Pitkin, Garfield, and Rio Blanco counties. Glenwood Springs police are trying out something old. The department is beefing up foot patrols in order to better handle a growing problem with vagrants downtown.
Locals disagree on how to best deal with an increasing number of people staying in Glenwood who are sleeping in parks, spending long hours panhandling, and overwhelming the area's support services. It's legal to do all of those things, but Police Chief Terry Wilson hopes to at least eliminate related problems, so he's extending foot patrols downtown on Saturday and Sunday nights.
There are nuisance crimes that oftentimes come with these activities, whether it be urinating in public, open container of alcohol. So we're going to try and be very proactive and very alert to those things.
Because an officer can then intervene. The goal of the foot patrols is to make local businesses and tourists feel more comfortable. They'll continue through part of September. Chief Wilson says there is not enough money in the police budget to continue them next year without additional funding. A public meeting on the vagrancy issue is scheduled for next month.
WeCycle could open bike stations in Basalt and Willits next spring.
Basalt will pay $17,500 to the bike-sharing nonprofit to review the feasibility of expanding into the Mid-Valley. WeCycle operates in Aspen now and has been exploring adding locations throughout the Roaring Fork Valley. Basalt Mayor Jackie Whitsitt says bike-sharing in Basalt would make it faster and easier for people to use bus services.
I think we need to be more careful because it seems like we're constantly writing checks for something or another. But this to me is so huge and makes Rafta a bigger, better thing than what it is already.
The idea is to relieve car and bike parking at BRT stations and to also replace short trips in Basalt and Willits. WeCycle is working to line up governments, organizations, and other entities to help cover the full cost of running a year-round program in Basalt and Willits that's estimated at $380,000. Basalt officials have also decided to start over in looking for bids for building an underpass spanning Highway 82. Bids so far have been more than $7 million, $2 million more than projected. The Forest Service was met by protesters Tuesday in a remote spot in the Thompson Divide. The agency is starting a review of a proposal to drill an exploratory well in the area, which is southwest of Carbondale. Protesters who gathered this week don't want any natural gas drilling there. They say the area's natural environment is too valuable.
It's tough to imagine coming up here for anything other than peaceful moments in the great outdoors. But about 40 people Tuesday maneuvered mud-caked roads to protest drilling. Some even slept over.
And you're carrying a pillow. Did you camp?
We did. We camped out last night and enjoyed some time around the campfire.
That's Zane Kessler, director of the Thompson Divide Coalition. He's working to keep out energy development over the 220,000 acres that make up the divide.
We have interests at stake, whether you're a grazer, or a small business owner, or a hiker or a mountain biker. You know, everybody has skin in the game here.
The dispute over drilling here has been ongoing for years. Hunters, hikers, ranchers, and others argue the area is not suitable for wells and infrastructure. But energy company SG Interests is taking first steps toward development. Scott Fitzwilliams is forest supervisor for the White River National Forest.
When a gas company files a notice of intent to stake a well, one of the first things we do is go out there with our specialists.
Today, this four-acre patch of Forest Service land becomes a science lab. A team of hydrologists, archaeologists, biologists, and landscape architects will comb the area to determine the best location for the proposed well.
Like all projects, we have standards and guidelines to meet. We have timing limitations with elk calving. We have visuals, all the things that'll go into the determination of whether or not we permit the well.
Fitzwilliams believes the amount of disturbance will be small. Plus, it's hard to tell, but this area isn't untouched. There are 10 wells nearby that mostly store natural gas. This well is different. It's exploratory. It's drilled to determine how much gas is underground. Robbie Gwynn is vice president of SG Interests.
Well, it just lets us know whether we want to continue developing in this area. And it tells us what kind of investments, capital investments, we would want to make to start full development.
The company would plunk down several millions of dollars for the well.
We would like to find out whether we want to continue developing here. Development in this area would complement the development that we have further south.
SG Interests has drilled 36 wells in Gunnison and Delta counties. Back at the potential well site, scientists are looking over the land on one side of the road and protesters are gathered on the other. Bill Hunt lives in Aspen but spends a lot of time out here.
We ride horses, we walk, we have a cabin over North Thompson Creek, my wife's cabin, and graze cattle on that.
He fears energy development would affect his cattle operation.
We'd conceivably lose that income. And conceivably we'd have water damage, and conceivably the air quality could go to hell for a fair amount of time.
Ultimately, it's up to Fitzwilliams to decide this first step in a long process, whether to approve a Forest Service use plan for the proposed exploratory well.
The first thing we're going to do is make sure we consider all the environmental effects, what the issues are, what the public's saying, and make sure we disclose them. And then after that, I'm going to rely a lot on policy and process and the laws that govern oil and gas leasing.
If he gives the green light, the proposal will go through a series of steps that include the Bureau of Land Management. A full environmental review would be launched and the public would get opportunities to comment. It could take up to 3 years before any exploration could happen.
Major support for Aspen Public Radio's environmental reporting comes from the John Denver Aspen Glow Fund at the Aspen Community Foundation, promoting responsible stewardship of the lands and wilderness of Aspen and the Roaring Fork Valley.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Elise Thatcher. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
The town of Carbondale and a marijuana testing lab are asking the state for help. They want Colorado to crack down on a testing requirement for retail marijuana.
Carbondale-based Green Hill Laboratories made headlines when it decided to test marijuana for microbial contaminants. The state started requiring such testing earlier this year. So Hillary Glass and Jessica Olson opened up the first lab on the western slope to tap that market. But they've hit a major speed bump because the state has not been enforcing the testing requirement. Here's Hillary Glass.
The state requires every harvest batch to be tested for shigatoxin-producing E. coli, salmonella species, and a total mold count.
What could they cause, or how would they affect people if someone were to ingest those?
They would just make you sick. A type of food poisoning. STC E. coli could cause liver damage, and a whole list of effects.
And so the state hasn't been enforcing a requirement to have that testing done. What has that meant for your business?
The nature of microbial screening is that it doesn't really work as a voluntary program. It's something that has to be a level playing field for everyone in the industry.
And tell me more about that. Why wouldn't I, as a producer, maybe, I'd probably want to make sure my products are safe to eat?
Well, naturally, everybody wants their products to be high quality and safe, but the letter of the law dictates that a product which fails a contaminant test is required to be quarantined, and two additional tests have to be performed, and if either of those follow-up tests fail, the batch has to be destroyed. So there's not only an upfront cost in terms of the fees to perform a test, but there's also the threat of losing your livelihood, or at least sustained financial losses from an outcome such as that. If it's not a required test, then people who choose not to test can simply move their product to market without the expense or the risk, and people who would elect to test are not only incurring more expense, but they're taking on a risk that their competitors don't have to absorb.
That was Jessica Olson and Hillary Glass with Green Hill Labs in Carbondale. The town of Carbondale recently decided to appeal to Colorado's Medical Enforcement Division over the matter that may have had an effect. Shortly afterwards, state officials sent out a bulletin saying it'll begin enforcement by the end of this month.
The first day of school for students at a public charter school near Woody Creek meant more than new teachers and textbooks. Kids at the K-8 Aspen Community School spent their first day Monday in a new school building.
Welcome to the first day in the new Aspen Community School. What do you think?
Students plopped in a semicircle on the floor of the new Aspen Community School cheer loudly. It's the first all-school assembly, and Principal Jim Gilchrist is laying down ground rules.
The number one thing that we want to do at school every single day is make sure everyone in our community feels safe,
welcome, and included.
Safe, welcome, and included.
Parts of today feel pretty typical, but it's hard to ignore the new contemporary surroundings. The look is bright and natural, and classrooms are outfitted with smart boards or interactive whiteboards. This 13,000-square-foot schoolhouse replaced an aging log structure. Lander McNamee is an eighth grader.
I think it's really cool. It's kind of hospital-like, but it's definitely really modern, and I like it a lot.
The schoolhouse is nice, but McNamee and his friends are most excited about...
I'm really looking forward to the gym.
Yeah, me too.
Gym is probably my favorite part.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have a gym last year, and it's really nice to have a gym this year.
Last year there was like maggots falling out of the roof.
There's literally maggots falling from the ceiling.
The maggot sighting is unconfirmed, but wouldn't be too far-fetched. The old log school building made the list as one of Colorado's lowest performing public school facilities. The school launched a major fundraising effort to build the $9.1 million project. Besides the school building and the gym, it includes new grass playing fields and employee housing. But Monday's all-school assembly wasn't just about rules. Visiting Tibetan Buddhist monks blessed a box full of student submissions on lessons learned in the old building they'd like to carry into the new. Renovations at the community school will continue. Phase two of construction includes a new amphitheater and a music and science building.
Colorado Mountain College is examining diversity. The school's Board of Trustees is reviewing what it calls the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Plan. It will be eventually adopted throughout CMC.
Reporter Allison Bektesh spoke with Richard Gonzalez, General Counsel for CMC, about the rapidly changing demographic of students and the growing need for inclusivity programming.
Can you begin by telling me what the current demographics of the CMC students are?
In the Roaring Fork Valley, the numbers reflect the reality that the Hispanic-Latino population is very, very high. So approximately 19% of our students are Hispanic and Latino. But that number is skyrocketing even as we speak. This year's enrollment figures are just amazing in terms of overall enrollment being up substantially. And of that amount, the highest percentage increase is attributable to 18-year-old students entering college for the first time. Many of them are first-generation college attendees. So that's the reality that the college has seen coming for quite some time. And as part of its strategic plan, one of the highest priorities is to develop an effective diversity plan so that the college can better serve the community in which it's located.
How, in general, do the students at CMC locations compare to the communities they serve, the demographics? Are we seeing a slightly different ratio within the college than maybe within the town?
Yes, we are so far. In terms of the existing student body, we have a ways to go before we begin to even approach the demographics in our community. If you look at just first-generation college students and primarily the Hispanic-Latino population, we're barely approaching 20%. Meanwhile, if you look at some of the demographics in the local schools, in the Roaring Fork and western Garfield County, the numbers are quite high, and they are way above 50%. So there's a big difference there that the college needs to try and bridge the gap so that it can be more inclusive in terms of serving the community where we're located.
What are some of the provisions the diversity plan has?
So there are 23 recommendations in the plan. They do include training for staff to be culturally competent. There is training for students as well who attend CMC and who perhaps need some help on the social, financial, and personal level to make it through college.
Richard Gonzalez, General Counsel at Colorado Mountain College, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Anytime, Allison.
A draft of the CMC Diversity and Inclusion Plan is available online at aspenpublicradio.org.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Marcy Grivenin. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station. Construction is underway for a second compressed natural gas station in Glenwood Springs. When finished, the CNG filling stop will be the first in Glenwood that's open to the public. We take a look at the economics behind natural gas cars and trucks and who might use such a station.
The newest fueling stop is in the very early stages. A maze of small pipes are still sticking out of the ground next to backhoes digging a connector line under a nearby road. It's next to an existing gasoline station at the West Glenwood exit. This new location is being built by the company Trillium CNG. It's part of WEC Energy Group, which already runs a natural gas station in Glenwood Springs for public transportation buses.
Garfield County and the U.S. Forest Service both have several bi-fuel CNG / gasoline pickup trucks, so we would expect them to be fueling at the station.
Heather McGregor is with the Carbondale-based Clean Energy Economy for the Region, or CLEAR.
Having the station open up will just open up the market for numerous private sector fleets to have more of their trucks and vans be powered by CNG.
McGregor says it's not entirely clear what the demand locally is for CNG, but she's been advising people in the Roaring Fork Valley about what kind of car or truck would be a good fit.
HVAC contractors, lighting contractors, folks that are driving up and down the valley day after day in work trucks and work vans. CNG is a perfect alternative for them.
Glenwood Station and McGregor's coaching are part of a multi-million dollar statewide effort by officials in Denver. Wes Maurer is Transportation Program Manager for the Colorado Energy Office.
So there's a few different reasons why the state is focused on compressed natural gas.
Maurer cites lower emissions, which can mean cutting ozone precursors by 60% to 90%. Then there's Colorado's sizable natural gas production, even with the recent slowdown.
Colorado is a net exporter of natural gas. We produce about 3 times as much as we consume. On the other hand, the U.S. imports about 40% of its petroleum from other countries. And so using compressed natural gas as a fuel helps to keep money in the Colorado economy, in the local economy.
Over the last 5 years, the natural gas equivalent of a gallon of gas has been, on average, a little over $2. Maurer and McGregor say that's to be expected in the coming years, too. Here's Maurer.
Oil prices are volatile, and that's what causes gas and diesel to fluctuate. So the reality is that the commodity cost of gas and diesel as it relates to the oil market is 60% or above, whereas natural gas hovers around 20% of that commodity cost.
In other words, U.S. natural gas is so much more dependable, it's cheaper. Heather McGregor also describes the supply as safe because of this factor.
Transportation is a tiny, tiny increment of the total consumption market for natural gas. So even if we were to double, triple, quadruple the amount of CNG purchased in the area or used for transportation, it would still be just a tiny increment compared to what we depend on for heating our homes and our buildings.
So Colorado has funneled about $15 million of federal money into helping local governments, businesses, and residents buy natural gas vehicles. Another $15 million is going towards jump-starting up to 30 natural gas stations in the next few years. On average, fueling stations cost $1 to $1.5 million to build. $500,000 helped pay for the station in Glenwood, plus $90,000 from the Garfield County Commissioners and $10,000 from the City of Glenwood Springs. The station is expected to be open to the public this fall. This weekend's Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day Experience will be the 21st year of the event. It's also one of the festival's biggest lineups, including veteran acts like Lenny Kravitz and No Doubt. Jim Horowitz, the event's founder, says each year brings a new set of challenges. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort reports.
One band making its debut at the Labor Day Experience is a Colorado one. The Fray is a Denver-based band known for its 2005 hit, Over My Head, Cable Car. Joe King, guitarist and co-founder of the group, says playing Colorado is special because of the band's connection to the state.
It's turned out to be the ultimate like music hometown, you know, for us. You know, there's such a pride when we play Colorado and hometown shows.
He says people were surprised when members of the band didn't want to move to major coastal cities after the band found success.
So many people were asking, you know, so where are you going to move? When are you going to move to L.A.? And when are you going to move to New York? And we just, every time, we had said, well, why would we move? I mean, we're from Denver. This is our spot.
Other bands this year include Fits in the Tantrums and Hozier. But attracting musicians has become increasingly difficult for Jazz Aspen Snowmass over the years. But it hasn't always been this way.
Tony Bennett, me playing the piano with Herbie Hancock, the second one, it was 97.
Jim Horowitz, president of Jazz Aspen Snowmass, recounts all of the people he's met in his years running the organization. Tony Bennett, Taj Mahal, B.B. King.
You've met everyone.
Oh yeah, I met everyone. Everyone that came I met, absolutely.
Jim's a huge part of the Aspen music community. Each summer, he brings some of the biggest names in the music scene, whether it's to the JAS June shows or Jazz Cafe or the Labor Day Experience, which caters to a more pop and rock-centric audience. But after all the work of putting events together, he says it's tough to see it go away so quickly.
It always is over too fast. You know, there's so much work involved and so much time and planning and effort. And then it's just like, poof, 3 days go by and it's over. It's the sadness of, oh, wow, it's going to be like, it's a year before we'll be back in this place.
For more than two decades, Horowitz and his staff have been choosing musicians from a top secret list. There's about 30 groups listed. Some have been around forever. Some just recently reached the mainstream. Jim says it's hard to fill out a lineup that people, one, will come up to Snowmass to see, and two, can actually be put together. Take Chicago, for example, who played at the Music Tent in June. It took 15 years to get them here just because of scheduling conflicts.
If it doesn't pass muster, it doesn't really matter to people. If they don't love it, they're not coming.
But securing local bands isn't any easier than booking other acts. Horowitz says the entire industry has changed.
The challenge is that there's more opportunities for the artists. It seems like it's threading a smaller and smaller needle hole.
And as the old adage of supply and demand goes, fewer resources, higher price. It's like that in the music industry. Horowitz has had trouble finding artists that can fill his venues to capacity. And on top of that, people's calendars have shifted. Not too long ago, kids went back to school after Labor Day. Now, maybe 2 weeks before. Despite the challenges, he says artists never say no because they don't want to be here. It's a problem of logistics. They know it's a quality operation, Horowitz says.
You know, artists have heard and agents here that the artists are well taken care of, that the audience is great, that the sound is good, the layout.
Still, the festival is two decades strong and Horowitz has no intentions of stopping anytime soon, especially if he gets to meet all of these amazing musicians. Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News.
The Arts and Culture Desk at Aspen Public Radio is funded by the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation with a mission to support the arts, community, and outreach.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. Have a nice afternoon. I'm Marcy Grivenin.
And I'm Elise Thatcher. To hear the show again or download a Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.